you getting any back this week?
Potentially, Reece Stanley, and I think Gary Rowan will play. I think there's even more certainty around that. So those two are likely. But really, the bulk of those guys that are missing at the moment will be a post-buy proposition. And there's a big cohort of them. So I think I earmarked this last week that we just need to think through exactly how we reintroduce those guys. Quite a few of them would be okay to play next week when we have a bye. So they'll be jumping out of their skin. But obviously the quandary for us is with, you know, 4, 5, 6 guys available, bring them all back at once does present a challenge for cohesion.
We're sort of halfway through the season and we're always trying to see what the pecking order is.
So are we.
Yeah. Is it an odd year in that way? I mean, Melbourne's probably the target, and then from there it's a bit hard to know who's who in the zoo.
Yeah, I think given their performance, it put Brisbane and Fremantle in that category as well, and I'm probably underselling the Saints a little bit. But and in a really close competition, I must admit I've felt this for a long time. But as has been pointed out to me, coaches tend to be a bit more pessimistic around this stuff than you know, the average media commentator. And with good reason, you know, it's our job to look at the strengths of opposition teams and think about all the things that could go wrong. Otherwise, we'd be accused rightly of being complacent. Because, you know, I think even there's a couple of teams struggling with their own issues right at the moment. I just think there's a big group below those teams I mentioned up the top that can beat each other on any given day. And then, so when you have a really close competition like this, the quirks of the draw tend to play a really important part. And it's not just the fixture as is laid out, but it's also the timing of things in terms of form. I've said it a lot. It's not who you play, it's when you play them. So it keeps us on our toes. So I think to expand more on your question, where do we think we sit in that big muddle of teams? It's very hard to say. We've just got enough evidence probably over the last month or 6 weeks that we can, if we play well, we're going to be a handful for virtually every team. But we have patches where we let ourselves down a little bit. We're very, very open to being beaten. So I think that's driving us a little bit at the moment. We're 7-4. I look at our last half of the year and I see some good teams in our fixture. So try to sort of not look at that too much and focus on how good we can get our footy. Because we're still of the view that we are building, and if we can get it to a really high level, you know, our ambition is to get to the point where we're just playing such good footy that the quirks of the draw and an injury here or two shouldn't trouble us too much.
Chris, one of those quirks is you hadn't been to Marvel for 12 months, now you're there twice in 3 weeks. Were there any lessons from playing there against St Kilda that you can put into the way you play your game style as opposed to where you play it, you know, being under a roof?
Yeah, look, it's naive to say that you just play the same way irrespective, because GMHBA is different to the MCG, which is different to Marvel, without even sort of contemplating the non-Victorian venues. And you do need to adjust a little bit. So having a bit of a cider against the Saints was helpful. The game is played differently there, especially against the tenant teams that play there a lot. And I suspect, as is the case with us, that even subconsciously, the style of game you play tends to complement the way that venue asks you to play. No, it's always clean, the ball moves really fast, you can back your skills, and the Bulldogs certainly have the talent to execute that game style. So we have looked at the St Kilda game. We thought that we played pretty well for the most part against a good team. And you know, the 20 minutes that really let us down cost us the game. So we took some lessons out of that, but there were less about the venue and the opposition, to be honest, and a little bit more about us, although the opposition played very well in that patch. So yeah, we feel well enough prepared to play well.
You got the rising star nom. I think it was the first in 3 years for the club.
Was it?
Yeah.
Max Holmes hasn't been nominated for a rising star.
Not by my.
Who's running the shop in there? Is that my brother? Is it? I have to send him a text. Max Holmes hasn't been nominated for a rising star.
He wasn't on the list either.
I should probably keep track of these things better. Okay.
Sorry.
Are you surprised Max Amos hasn't been?
What gives you that impression? No, I think it's obviously a really competitive market, that one. And like even Sam De Koning's come in and played arguably the hardest position on the ground without any AFL experience before this year on some star players and acquitted himself really well. And it's taken until round 11 for him to be nominated. So it's obviously, it's rarefied air. I did say to Sam, it doesn't mean much until you actually win it. Oh, no, Joel said that to him, actually. The Max part, Max has been a really important part of our team. And he's one of the guys we're looking forward to getting back post bye. But on Sam, without being too kind of flippant around the achievement, because it is significant for him, I think it's just a small step in what's going to be a fantastic career. It's good recognition for him, but I'd like to think that the recognition he was getting internally was at least as significant up to this point.
And proof you don't need multiple top five picks to find players.
Yeah, but we'd prefer them. Yeah, we would. It's
really?
I could talk about this stuff for hours, so I'll try to be succinct. But the draft over the last decade's been a pretty good guide to talent. It's the only objective measure we have, of assessing talent. And there are some oddities here and there, but for the most part, I think these days you sit at draft night just crossing names off your list. Most teams have a pretty similar list of players in the top 20 or 30. But what has been a pattern over the last couple of years is that big key defenders and ruckmen, it's been longer than a couple of years, maybe can sort of slip through a little bit. So Sam was a late first round pick for us. And maybe if he's a key forward, he might have been sort of out of our reach. I don't think, even though I say it is a pointer to quality draft position, the fact that Sam was a late first rounder, I think, is a bit of an anomaly. Yeah, I think so. I think that's the plan, unless Norton plays at centre half back, which, if I were the Bulldogs, that's what I'd do. I wouldn't. No, I think that's a likely matchup.
Do you like the idea of those matchups? These great hopefully one-on-one battle we're going to see for years to come. Hopefully De Koning and King or Kings.
Yeah, plural. Yeah, yeah. I think so. I did say post the St Kilda game, even though it was a bit flat with the loss, that it was, I think, one of the parts of the game that Geelong supporters in particular, I think supporters in general, could take out, that there are some star, young, very tall players. They're different to kind of the guns. The best players of the previous generation, Jason Dunstall, sort of, low 190s. Like, these guys are 204 centimetres, and it's not until... This is one of the things the pandemic's cost footy fans. The opportunity to come and see these guys in the flesh. Even when you see them in their civilian clothes, it's striking how big they are. And then you overlay that with the agility of Max King and Sam De Koning. It's scary where things are going to get in the next decade. I'm certainly going to feel shorter over the next little bit. So I think that's one of the romantic parts of our game that's, I'm not going to say it's unique, but it's certainly rare in my observation in world sport, that you get those one-on-one battles. And I think that's one of the things that the Laws of the Game Committee at the AFL have tried to enshrine in the game. The idea that, we don't have an offside rule. These guys are kind of side-by-side with each other the whole game. So I don't want to put any more pressure on Sam. We want him to go out and do his stuff. And Norton's already a star of the competition. But yeah, if I were a Geelong supporter, that's one of the things I'd be excited about, finally getting to see some more live footy. Because it'd be good sitting at home in your lounge room on Friday night, but it'd be much better at the venue. We'd love our supporters to come and see what those guys can do if they haven't had the chance to see them in the flesh for the last two or three years.
The availability of Rowan Stanley, will that impact whether Shannon Neal gets another run?
It'll impact it, because if we have two in, two will have to go out. But it's not necessarily that a ruckman in Stanley had come in for the sort of, but I'm not just going to call him a ruckman, Shannon. He's as much a forward as he's a ruckman, but yeah, all those things are in the mix. But it's not a foregone conclusion that he'll be one of the two that go out if those two come in.
Do you look to use the fact that the bye following Chris to somebody for a couple of weeks that in the older veteran class you were earlier in the year that you say, look, here's a chance maybe to get, you know, a good physical and mental break from footy and be right for round 14?
Yeah, we thought about that in our early planning, and really Dangerfield's the one that's fit into that category, so I don't know exactly if we had primed him with his preparation to play this week. He probably would have made it, but we thought it was prudent to get him right for the game post-bye. And then beyond that, we don't have many players available, so we don't have as much room to play with as we would have if we had a full list.
The Dogs have quite a deep midfield class, really talented players as well, and we see a lot of them push forward, and like the Bontempelli and Josh Dunkley types. Does that change the way that you guys structure your back six and the defensive half, knowing that you'll be playing against, I guess, midfielders who can go forward and kick goals, and how does that sort of change the structure of your team?
It doesn't change the personnel too much. We've been pretty consistent. That is one area where we've had some continuity and cohesion in our back half. We'd love to have Jack Henry available, but besides Jack, it's been pretty consistent there, even to the point where Tom Atkins and Mark O'Connor have played a little bit more midfield because we've had close to our full complement of defenders. But you're right, their midfield is so deep that they need to have the excess midfielders. Now, that's not a derogatory term, because guys like Bontempelli are playing forward, and there's a case to be made, like with Dangerfield, he might be as good a forward as he is a midfielder. But you just need to think about those flips and what the makeup of their forward half is going to be. So it's a bit of a balance between being conscious of what they're aware of, but also asking some questions of their forwards. And you know, Tom Stewart played well last week. Mitch Duncan's been really effective back there. A back, backline group of six or seven or eight players have been pretty solid. So very aware of their strengths with, you know, their tools, the midfield types, you know, Waitman and those guys. They've got a pretty balanced forward line, but we won't. I don't think we'll do anything to destabilise the way our backs play, put it that way.
And in terms of the, the pace of the Bulldogs play, especially at Marvel, that's always been a bit of a threat in recent seasons. Is that something that you guys look at as well and try to slow them down? And if so, what sort of strategies would you put in place?
Yeah, I think it's true of the Bulldogs generally, especially at Marvel, that because they have so much talent through their midfield, my observation is that they back that talent in and they try to use the ball. They're not a bang it on the boot team. They try to use their numbers and play with speed. So, but you know, to simplify it, the game's always the same. You're trying to either turn the opposition over straight away or make them go slow so that you can get set behind the ball. So if Norton gets really penetrating ball use with time and space, he's going to be a handful for any team defence. And then on the other side, yeah, we do think about trying to force them to defend with a bit of speed on the ball. But they are also at that venue, they're pretty good at getting back. So it's one of those things you watch on TV and you think, should just move the ball quicker, but we're not going to move the ball really quickly into a position where we're outnumbered by two or three. So therein lies the balance and the situational attack that we need to execute.
And having, talk about Tom Stewart and how fantastic he was on the weekend, what's it like having him mentor or have Sam in the wings as another key back?
Yeah, well, I think Tom's been really good for Sam. You know, the other guys as well, but in particular Tom. Because it wasn't that long ago that Tom was playing local footy here in Geelong. He's had a bit of a different path into the AFL to Sam. But I think there's a bit of empathy there because a young guy coming in naturally has a few doubts. And I think it's really easy for Tom to speak intelligently about the doubts he had coming in and how he overcame them. And I think it's easy to say from this position, but the 10 or 12 games that Sam De Koning's played should give him enough confidence to feel like he can do the job against anyone. And the very best players get beaten occasionally, but that's going to happen. And it's happened to Tom Stewart as well. But I think that sort of coaching from the peer group is better than any coaching that the 46-year-olds can provide.
And